It's half past eight.
It's half past eight, New York time. Time to wake up America and stump the experts. Each week at this time, Lucky Strike invites you to its nationwide quiz party. For every question we use, Lucky Strike pays out $10 plus a copy of the new Information Please quiz book. If your question stumps us, you get $25 more plus a 24-volume set of the Encyclopedia Britannica. Send your questions to Information Please, 480 Lexington Avenue, New York City. If our editorial staff edits your questions a bit, don't fret over it. In case of similarity, we'll have to be sole judge of who shall be paid, and all questions become the property of Information Please. And now light up a lucky strike as I present our master of ceremonies, the literary critic of the New Yorker magazine, Clifton Fadiman. Mr. Fadiman.
Ladies and gentlemen, Information Please continues as usual, on its unrehearsed way. Tonight we have on our panel of experts Mr. John Kieran, sports writer and fact retainer of note, Franklin P. Adams, light verse writer, originator of the Conning Tower and General Sage, Oscar Levant, musician, author, screen actor, and all-round bright boy, and as our special guest, the distinguished poet and author of The Devil and Daniel Webster, that's shortly to be seen as a film called All That Money Can Buy, Stephen Vincent Benet. Now remember, for each question missed, Lucky Strike rings up $25. And that's paid out to the sender, plus 24 volumes of the Encyclopedia Britannica. Now we're off with a musical question from Mary E. Groh of Lebanon, New Hampshire. And I'm going to put the question in a rather peculiar way. You're going to hear three different compositions. What poets furnished the inspiration for the compositions that you're going to hear played? Now, let's have the first. Get two out of three. Mr. Levant's hand was up about the third note.
Well, those are unforgettable notes, all of them. That's Debussy's La Prémédie. Well, I'll say it in English. The Afternoon of a Faun.
Yes, and
Mallarmé.
Mallarmé, yes. Mallarmé is the poet who gave furnished the inspiration with his poem, La Prémédie d'un Faun. And by the way, the music is much clearer than the poem is.
If it wasn't for the music, I would not have known Mr. Mallarmé's
name. Mallarmé?
No.
Well, he's much less famous, of course, than Debussy is. Now, how about the second one? Well, I think most of us know the music. Mr. Adams?
Schiller.
Schiller is right. And the...
W. Tell.
W. Tell, yes.
Who's the composer? Ask him who the composer is.
Rossini.
That's right. Competition among you musical experts is very keen. Now the third and last of these. Well, I have just one hand on that, Mr. Levant.
I think that's a little too popular for the rest of the guests. That's,
That's letting him down easy.
Tchaikovsky's Romeo and Juliet.
Yes, and the poet...
Well, Mr. Adams knows the poet, Shakespeare.
Mr. Adams? I bet Mr. Adams can even give us the first name, if pressed. Mr. Adams?
W.H. Shakespeare.
Yes, very good. All right. Well, that gives us three out of three. Now, how about this one from W.E. Fong of Pittsburgh? It's about farming, gentlemen, and I want you to get two out of three, if you can. Who, in fact or in fiction, deserted farming to lead an army? Mr. Benet.
Cincinnatus.
Yes, the Roman patriot Cincinnatus. And, Mr. Benet, we have in our own history a patriot who did the same thing.
Well, that would be George Washington. He left a very prosperous farm to take command of the American army in the Revolution.
Well, he was a gentleman farmer, that's true.
He worked at it, too.
Yes, that's true enough. Mr. Kieran, was there any other?
Israel Putnam.
Yes, old Israel Putnam actually downed tools and left to fight. Mr. Levant?
Sergeant York.
Sergeant York?
Well, I
very
think
famous.
He was a distinguished patriot.
He was and is. Whether he actually deserted farming to lead an army is questionable. He was in the army, and he led most of it by the time he was finished. Now, who raised an army of men by means of a farming operation? Raised an army of men by means of a farming operation. Mr. Adams.
Cadmus.
Cadmus is right. Very good. Who is Cadmus? You didn't know you had it in you, did you, Mr. Adams?
That was a dental operation, wasn't it?
It started in by being a dental operation. What did Cadmus sew in order to raise...
Teeth.
Yes, teeth. Whose teeth?
The dragon's.
The dragon's teeth. Very good, Mr. Adams. And out of them came an army of men. What happened after that? Do you remember the rest of the story, or did you stop there?
That's none of my business.
Mr. Kieran.
Well, they were going to attack him, so I picked up a big rock and threw it in the midst of that army, and they began to slay one another until there were only a few left that he could handle. And he took them over.
Yes. And do you think Mr. Adams will remember it next time? No. That's
ain't
quite right.
Ain't going to be no next time about Cadmus.
You think we'll never have him again on this show. How about this one? Who chose to farm rather than play baseball? Mm. Mr. Levant.
Eddie Rausch.
Eddie Rausch. Who was he?
Center fielder of Cincinnati, previously the Giants. And
yeah.
He left farming, came back to baseball, went back to farming, went back to baseball. He's farming now.
You make it sound
now.
Fascinating. Is he farming now?
Hope so.
No, he isn't.
That gives us 3 out of 3. How about this one? This comes from Edward A. Kiernan of Bell Harbor, Long Island. It's a baseball question. They tell me that Ted Williams is now batting over 400. Can you name 4 major league batters since 1900 who have done the same thing? Gee, you have all sorts of hands on this. Mr. Adams, start us off.
One was George Sisler.
George Sisler.
And the
Sisler's
other was
right.
Rogers Hornsby.
Rogers Hornsby is right. That gives us 2. Very good, Mr. Adams. Mr. Levant.
William Terry, popular manager of the Giants.
Very good. You got to write ads.
Mm?
That gives us 3. Now we have to get 1 more. We've got Hornsby, Terry, and George Sisler. Over 400. Mr. Kieran.
I'll take a chance on Harry Heilman.
That's right.
Harry Heilman be right, apparently. Right. Batted 403. There are a couple of others. One who they are, Mr. Kieran?
Yeah,
or
I know one
me?
Before. Lewis on the Boston Red Sox around 189. That's before your time.
Much Duffy before.
Lewis. Yeah.
Don't know that.
No.
Mr. Kieran?
He never hit over 400.
He hit about 600.
You're thinking of Huey Duffy.
Huey Duffy, that's right.
He hit 438.
That's pretty good.
About 1890.
That's pretty good on this show. Well, there was Joe Jackson and Napoleon. Napoleon what?
Lajoie.
All right, that gives us 5 or 6 of them. Now, how about this one from Jeanette Van Alsberg of Grand Rapids, Michigan? Can you give me, let's say, 4 lines of poetry that mention objects that may be found in a bedroom? Poetry, gentlemen, not songs. Real honest-to-goodness poetry. Any object that may be found in a bedroom, Mr. Benet?
I can give you 1 line. Her bed is India. There she lies, a pearl.
Hey, that's very pretty.
That is, I think, Mr. Shakespeare, and I think in Troilus and Cressida.
Sounds all right. How about it, Mr. Kieran? Does that pass by your Eagle Shakespearean?
Went right by me, fast.
I'm
you
sure
mean you have to give 4 lines?
4 separate ones. Now we've...
Oh.
Mr. Adams.
As snug as a bug in a rug.
As snug as a bug in a rug, yes. And you're, of course, referring to the rug, not the bug, in the case of the bedroom.
Not necessarily.
That would be a good one, except that it's not a line of poetry. Yes, I guess
it is.
It's a jingle by Benjamin Franklin. I call it a line of verse. Good enough. I'll take that. How about 2 more that mention
objects? How about Rockin' Chair, You've Got Me?
I beg pardon?
No, that's not poetry.
No? How, Mr. Mr. Benet?
Out went the taper as he hurried in. You could have had a taper in a 17th century bedroom. You'd now have an electric light.
Oh, a taper. I was thinking of the thing with a long snout.
Yes,
I get it now. Yes, that would be very good in a 17th century bedroom. That gives us 3 articles. Mr. Kieran?
How about go in and out the window?
Yes.
Don't you have windows in your bedroom?
Sure. But I think it's a child's jingle, perhaps, isn't it? Rather than a line of poetry. Mr. Levant?
Men never make passes at women who wear glasses. Glasses.
Oh, glasses. Yeah, I thought you were referring to women. I see. Yes, looking glasses. I get it. And there's a line from Ecclesiastes. Vanity of vanities, all is vanity. That would also be something found in a bedroom.
Not
Mr. Kieran? Pardon?
Not in my bedroom.
No, not in yours. there are a number of others. The mirror cracks from side to side, Mr. Kieran, from
That's
one
right.
of your favorite poets, Tennyson.
And,
right, we could go on. Now, how about this one from Fred Desmond of Montgomery, Alabama? Can you name at least 3 armies or navies in which Gary Cooper has served in the movies? Mr. Levant.
What army was he in Farewell to Arms?
I don't know.
He was in, it was in Italy, and it was mostly about women and Italian wine, but he was in an army, I know.
Yeah. Well, you've got everything
but the
plot and
characters. I think it was the United States with LaGuardia and Albert Spaulding. I think they were all in that same group.
Well, if it was a farewell to arms, I suppose he was acting as in the Italian army.
Italian army?
Be it?
I don't know. I'm
I don't
sure.
know. I didn't see the picture.
I only read the book, incidentally.
It was about a soldier in the American Army.
Pardon?
It was a soldier in the American Army.
In Italy?
Yes. We had soldiers in Italy in the last war.
That's right. Perfectly right. Perfectly right.
All right.
Sorry. Mr. Benet?
Yeah. I thought he was in the American Ambulance Service in Italy.
Mr. Hemingway was.
Mr. Cooper, in the picture.
In the picture.
That's
I didn't
right.
see the picture.
I, actually, right.
I guess that's right. Well, that's what Mr. Kieran
right.
Said. Now, how about another one, Mr.?
In the yeah. Empire, British Empire Army, in the Bengal Lancer, he was with a Cobra and
yeah,
French O'Tone.
That's right. yeah.
Was
with
India.
The British Colonials, that's
yeah.
quite right. That gives us two. And one more Army or Navy. Mr. Adams?
Well, there was a play called The Somethings of Virginia.
Yeah,
with Gary Cooper?
The Howards of Virginia.
I don't know if it's Gary Cooper.
Did it have Gary Cooper
no,
in it?
No, didn't have Leslie Howard in it either.
Why, my heavens, part. Who did it have?
Cary Grant.
This has got to be Gary Cooper.
Oh, I wouldn't.
What about Sergeant York?
Yes, what about Sergeant York? That would be a good one. What army?
The American Army.
Yes, so that gives us three. Then in the movie called The Real Glory, he was with the American Army in the Philippines. And in Beaugest with the Foreign Legion. That gives us plenty of armies. Mr. Cooper ought to get a pension. The next one is from C.E. Peterson of Regalsville, New Jersey. Now, I'm going to mention four words, one after the other, as is my custom. And each of these four words that I'll mention was written by a famous writer. You have to tell me who the writer is and where the words were mentioned. I'm just going to pick single words out of the works of these writers. The first word is unhouseled. Mr. Kieran.
That is from Hamlet, describing how his father was taken off hastily by, his prophetic soul, his uncle.
That's perfect, Mr. Kieran. That's picking it out of the works of Shakespeare. A single word. Unhouseled means what?
Well, taken unawares, and I don't really know the definition of that archaic
well,
word.
Isn't it the same as unshriven? I mean, he had to depart without the benefit of any religious rites?
Well, I believe that was added in Shakespeare's words.
Unhouseled, disappointed, unannealed?
Yes.
No reckoning made, but sent to my account with all my imperfections on my head. How about this one? Shures, S-H-O-U-R-E-S. Mr. Adams.
G. Chaucer.
G. Chaucer is right. That's right. And the word is what?
Means showers.
Showers, yes. It's Chaucerian.
One that a pulley with his showers swooping.
That's very good. I love the accent. You must have had a little Middle English in your ancestry, Mr. Adams.
It's a bit of a brogue.
get rid of those Zymol trochees. How about tintinabulation? Mr. Benny.
That's from Poe's The Bells. The bells, the tintinnabulation of the bells, as Rowan Poe.
That's right. What does tintinnabulation mean?
I suppose a kind of a tinny clanging.
I suppose so. Did he make the word up, Mr. Benny, or is it a regular word?
Onomatopoetic.
I think it comes from the Latin.
Yeah, it's tintinnabulous.
Still onomatopoetic.
Tintinabby, did you say? That's from Wordsworth.
Tintinnabulous.
Oh, I beg your pardon. That gives us, apparently... Well, we haven't lost a thing so far. We've paid out no dollars and no cents of the Encyclopedia Britannica. And now Mr. Cross, with a deep bow to Mr. Kieran, wishes to elaborate on a Shakespearean play title.
Well, the title, Mr. Kieran, is As You Like It. And, ladies and gentlemen, it serves as a very apt description of the way Lucky Strike buys tobacco this year and every year at market after market. You see, we know you like a milder, better-tasting cigarette. So we consistently pay the price to get the finer, the lighter, the naturally milder tobaccos. Let me give you an example. This year's auctions opened at South Boston, Virginia, last Tuesday, September 16th. And on that opening day, the American Tobacco Company paid 23% more per pound for the tobacco it bought for its cigarettes and other tobacco products. Yes, 23% above the average market price paid for all the various types and grades of tobacco sold there. And the best we bought goes into Lucky's. Smokers, in a cigarette, it's the tobacco that counts. And Lucky Strike means fine tobacco. Next time, ask for Lucky's and prove it to yourself.
Mr. Cross, your messages continue to be as I like them. I timed you at just 59 seconds. And now we'll go on with a question from John A. Leland of Atlanticville, South Carolina. Suppose we get 3 out of 4 on this one. Name the character of fact or fiction who called for help too late. I can think of 2.
Jekyll Hyde? No.
No, don't think so.
Well, the picture called for help too late. I take that back.
Mr. Benny.
Well, didn't Richard III shriek out, a horse, my kingdom for a horse, and nobody would give him a horse?
That's true. I wasn't thinking of Richard III. Mr. Kieran?
The boy who yelled wolf.
Richard. Yes, I think that would be a good one. The boy who cried wolf.
That wasn't too late. He overdid it.
Well, it was too late the last time.
Well, it was too late. It was just about early enough for the wolf and too late for the boy. Also, in the French poem, The Song of Roland, doesn't Roland defer blowing his horn for help when he's caught in the pass at Roncesvalles and he dies? Mr. Benet, do you remember that?
Yes, that's quite true. He hung around a long time before he thought he could blow his horn. It hurt his pride to do it.
Yes, that's what made the poem longer than most of us like it to be. Mr. Adams?
Old Mother Hubbard got to the cupboard too late.
Yes, she did. Did she call for help, though?
I don't understand what too late means.
Just too late, that's all. Just too late. But I think the boy who cried wolf and Roland would both be good answers. Perhaps Richard, too. Now, name a character who received news that peace had been declared too late. Gee, there we go again, Mr. Levant. Too late to prevent a battle. Mr. Kieran.
Andrew Jackson, the Battle of New Orleans.
That's right. Peace had been signed, but...
had been signed some weeks before.
Yes, at the Battle of New Orleans, and he couldn't hear about it owing to slow communications. How about a character who awoke too late to prevent a suicide? Mr. Benet.
That was Juliet.
Yes, Juliet, in Romeo and Juliet. That's quite right. And which one came late to his own funeral? Came late to his own funeral.
I don't understand that.
You're puzzled this evening, Mr. Levant.
Well, the too late part.
Came too late to his own funeral.
That would be impossible from my point of view.
Well, I guess he got there while the funeral was already going on. That's what it would mean. Mr. Adams?
Somebody by Mark Twain.
Yes, which one? Which character?
I think it was Tom Sawyer.
It was Tom Sawyer, yes. And Joe Harper came late to their own funeral and found it going on. All right, that gave us 4 out of 4, which was more than we need. Now, the next one is up the alley of Mr. Levant, and the other gentleman can rest for a while. This comes from John F. Stevens of Old Greenwich, Connecticut. Now, the pianist is going to play for us 3 modulations in their basic form, that is, just the chords, from well-known compositions. And Mr. Levant is asked to show that he recognizes them by playing the whole passage in its original form with all the frills and filigree work and so forth. Is that clear, Mr. Levant?
It's
all right,
clear,
let's have it
I'm
first.
Frightened.
Get 2 out of 3. Any luck, Mr. Levant?
Yeah, luck.
Doing that with then?
That's a Chopin A-flat harp etude.
Yeah, good enough. Apparently very easy for you, Mr. Levant. Maybe the next will be more difficult. All right, go ahead. How about
I couldn't recognize that. That has no profile of its own. It has a... it could be anything, like Wagner or anything... significant, almost. But as a modulatory passage without the theme, I don't know. I'm complaining in
other
ways.
Well, that's all right. I think you're making... I don't... no one can blame you for being ignorant of it, and no one can help praising you for your defense of it. It's the Moonlight Sonata, the first movement of Beethoven.
Well, I mean...
Can you get it now?
Would you like him to play it the way it is?
Yes, then? I would indeed.
Because I want to show you the difference.
All right.
Even hard to remember that part without the...
That's true, it is difficult. That gives you 1 wrong, Mr. Levant, nevertheless. All right, now how about the third? See if you can get the next one. That'll pass us through without losing any encyclopedias.
Mm-hmm.
Any luck on that?
What is it, John?
Paderewski.
Thank you very much, Mr. Levant and Mr. Kieran. Paderewski's what, Mr. Kieran?
Minuet.
The minuet, yes. Now, Donald Walsh of Wallingford, Connecticut, sends this one in. It's a Civil War question. Get 2 out of 3. Each of these Civil War battles, gentlemen, is known by 2 names. If I give you the first, tell me the second. Here's the first. Sharpsburg. Mr. Benet.
Now to the north is Antietam.
Yes. Why should there be that difference in terminology, Mr. Benet?
Well, the north in general took objects unfamiliar to them, which were usually natural objects, creeks and rivers and mountains and so forth. The southern troops knew less of cities and usually took the name of the nearest town.
I see. Will that be the case in the second instance? The Battle of Manassas had another name,
too.
That
would be the case there, because that was also called Bull Run.
Yes, Battle of Bull Run. There were 2 battles fought Bull Run, weren't there?
There were 2 battles of Manassas, if you're a southerner, or of Bull Run, if you're a northerner.
There were 3 battles of Manassas.
The
are
South
there?
Won both
yeah.
of them.
Jack Dempsey.
I never thought of that. Sure, the Manassas Mauler, right.
How about
the Battle of Pittsburgh Landing? Had another name, too, Mr. Adams.
Shiloh.
Shiloh is right. Any particular reason for that, Mr. Benet?
There was a little church near the battlefield called Shiloh Chapel. And the Southerners advanced on the church, and that was the first thing they saw. The Northern forces were posted near Pittsburgh Landing on the river. So then they naturally called the battle after where they were.
That makes it all clear and kind of tough for the high school boys who have to learn both names.
Is that the same Pittsburgh I come from?
I think so.
Pittsburgh, Mississippi.
Different Pittsburgh?
Oh, wow.
Still, we want to give the other Pittsburghs a chance on this program, too, Mr. Levant. Right. How about this one from R.M. Paul of Sunnyside, Long Island? It's a question about baseball. Name the ball player, present or past, whose first name was the following. Get 3 out of 4. These are classical first names. One's first name was Virgil. Who was that? Mr. Kieran.
Well, I'll give it to Oscar.
There are 2 Virgils. You can have the other one. I'll take Virgil Barnes. You can have the other one.
How about that, Mr. Kieran?
I was going to take Virgil Barnes.
Well, I'll take Virgil Davis.
I think he got you that time, Mr. Kieran. That's pretty
That's
good.
Right.
Scoring on Mr. Kieran is pretty good going.
I took Virgil in high school.
Virgil Davis of Pittsburgh and Virgil Barnes of the Giants. Now, how about Homer? We've had a Latin poet. How about a Greek poet?
I know.
Mr. Levant.
This is Mr. Kieran's turn.
Well, it was a Homer Peel played for St. Louis.
Is that the one you know?
Mr. Homer Peel. He once went down training with Pittsburgh many years ago.
And
That's
is
the same one.
Is there a Homer Summer?
Yeah, another outfielder. Summer, S-U-M-M-A.
Of the Indians? For Cleveland.
Yes, that's right. 2 homers. How about Horace? A baseball player whose first name was Horace.
Horace Stoneham.
He was an owner.
Manager or owner, isn't he?
Owner.
Horace Ford of the Cincinnati
That's
Reds.
Right.
Remember
Second
that,
baseman.
Mr. Kieran?
Second baseman.
That gives us 1 wrong. You've got to get the next one right. A baseball player whose name, believe it or not, is Mark Antony. Mr. Kieran.
Mark Antony Koenig.
Yes.
Used to play shortstop for the Yankees.
Good enough, Mr. Kieran. Thank you. That gives us 3 out of 4. I can't seem to stump these gentlemen tonight. How about this one from W.M. Manning of Des Moines, Iowa? Get 3 out of 4 again. Now, I'm going to give you just a stage direction from Shakespeare. You have to identify the play in which these stage directions occur. This is not easy. Here's the first. Wall holds up his fingers. Mr. Benet.
That is Midsummer Night's Dream.
Yes, it's from what part of it, Mr. Benet?
It's from the play within a play that the rustic characters are giving.
That's right. Who plays the part of the wall in that play within a play?
I haven't the faintest idea.
Do you remember which one it is? Is it Snout or is it Starveling?
I've
forgotten. The Tinker, Mr. Kieran? We'll never know. How about Exit Pursued by a Bear? Where does that come from? Exit Pursued by a Bear. Mr. Kieran.
That's Antigonus in Winter's Tale.
In A Winter's Tale, yes. I don't think very many of us remember that. You couldn't give me the act, Mr. Kieran, could
yes,
you?
Yes, he carries this baby out there, and he's supposed to abandon it. And he hates to do it, but he finally does because he's afraid of the king's wrath, and a bear comes and he leaves hurriedly.
Yes, it sounds more comical than
he
anything else.
He didn't tell
else.
You what act it was.
I guess he gave us the action, not the act. It's an act three. Now, here's another Shakespearean stage direction. He digs and sings. He digs and sings. Mr. Levant.
Hamlet, the grave...
Attaboy.
The grave digger sings.
That's quite right. The graveyard scene is right. And... that was Mr. Kieran patting the head of Mr. Levant. Clock strikes. Clock strikes. Mr. Kieran.
That is in Julius Caesar, I believe.
How could the clock strike in Julius Caesar?
Well, it was an anachronism. It didn't strike. I mean, they didn't have clocks that struck in those days.
Yes.
They had hourglasses and water clocks and things like that.
So Shakespeare just didn't care. Well, I think that's very good going, gentlemen. Maybe we'll have time for this one, for Mrs. Harrison Hatton of St. Paul. Get 2 out of 3. Identify these characters who turned up after a long absence, very much changed. Now, one who was last seen as a slave turned up as a royal advisor. Mr. Levant.
Joseph.
That's quite right. One who was last seen as a card shark turns up as a titled lady.
Well, oh, I know that.
You know that, Mr. Levant?
The Last of Mrs. Shaney.
Pardon?
The Last of Mrs. Shaney by Frederick Lonsdale.
I don't know the plot of that.
She's almost a lady. She almost marries a title.
good enough. How about...
I'm wrong there. She's not a card shop. She's a petty crook, I think.
Well, then we'll throw her out. The one I was thinking
of... Lady Eve.
The Lady Eve,
yeah.
Mr. Levant. That's right. Good enough. And how about one who was last seen as a warrior and then turns up as a beggar?
A woman?
No, a man. Mr. Kieran.
Ulysses.
Yes, Ulysses. And now here's Mr. Cross, who's been thumbing through his dictionary.
Well, Mr. Fadiman, I was interested in the definition of a cigarette. Quote, tobacco rolled in thin paper, end quote. Ladies and gentlemen, doesn't that simple definition make very clear that in a cigarette, it's the tobacco that counts? Next time you buy cigarettes, just remember you're really buying tobacco. The better the leaf, the better the smoke. Now, Lucky Strike means fine tobacco. You have proof of this in actual reports from market after market all over the South. Reports which prove that the American Tobacco Company consistently pays the price to get the finer, the lighter, the naturally milder tobaccos. For example, last season we paid 21% more than the market average at Mount Pleasant, Tennessee, 34% more at Asheville, North Carolina, and so on at market after market. And the best we bought goes into Lucky's. No wonder that with independent experts, with men who know tobacco best, it's Lucky's 2-to-1. So why not buy like an expert? Next time, ask for Lucky Strike.
Thank you, Mr. Cross. I'd like to announce that this is the fourth time in the history of information, please, that we have paid out, and I can say this accurately, quite cheerfully, no dollars and no sets of the Encyclopedia Britannica, courtesy of Lucky Strike. Thank you, Mr. Benet, for joining Lucky Strike's party tonight. Next week, our brace of regulars, Mr. Adams and Mr. Kieran, will be reinforced by a personality familiar to information, please, Miss Jan Strother, lecturer and author, and a figure new to us but known to all music lovers, the distinguished musician and conductor, Sir Thomas Beecham. Now remember, for every question we use, whether or not it's answered correctly, the sender gets $10.
This is the National Broadcasting Company.